Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this week. We're going to be at Pappas in Cockeysville. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're giving away some Raven scratch-offs. Had a $50 winner 2 weeks ago at a Greenmount station. Also, our friends at Goodwill. And we're going to be giving away turkeys setting up next Wednesday for some less fortunate folks downtown. If you have any interest in helping us serve a meal to over 3,000 people, courtesy of our friends at Wise Markets, as well as Goodwill, throw me a note, ness@baltimorepositive.com. And, of course, Win Donation. I got my Win Donation shirt on right now, 866-90-NATION. The weather's a little broken, man. It's a little chilly out there. Nice to have that insulation of those extra windows. Make sure you reach them at 866-90-NATION. I reached this guy last year. We got together at some point, and he has gone into the cannabis space after guarding quarterbacks in this league in Jacksonville and with the Baltimore Ravens. You remember him with the Baltimore Ravens a number of years ago. He's quietly still here in Maryland working on a business venture that was medicinal, but until November 4th has become sort of, I don't want to say over the counter, but certainly the laws are about to change here in Maryland. Eugene Monroe joins us now from Parts Unknown here in Maryland. Gene, a lot of folks don't know you never left when you came here to play, right?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. And you named some things that I want to be a part of that you're doing this season. So I will reach out to you just in terms of how you're giving back to the community, man. That's awesome. But I never left. And you know, I don't think I can leave. When I got traded to the Ravens, I got traded to my wife's home. She grew up here in the Baltimore area, born in Baltimore, grew up in Columbia, and her parents still live in Columbia. So yeah, I'm stuck in Maryland, and I love it here. I've been enjoying my time here. We made a home in Howard County, out here in Dayton. So yeah, just a lot of new things here since we last talked. We're going legal here in Maryland, which is so dope. I was fortunate enough to be the chairman of the Yes on 4 campaign to spread awareness on the
I didn't know you were the chairman. I didn't know that.
Yeah, man.
I just voted for the damn thing like 70% of everybody else in the state is all.
Yeah,
I said yes.
Just about 70, just over 65%. Thank you for that yes vote. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, some of the people who voted yes on it, you know, certainly were aware of it because of, you know, some of the efforts from us and, you know, a lot of people throughout Maryland who've been really fighting for this on a grassroots level for years and years and years. So, you know, I was just thankful to play a small part in that and change the destiny for some people here. Part of what's going to happen with legalization is record expungement. And for communities in Maryland, like Baltimore, where people have been arrested, and over-policed because of cannabis, you know, one, that's going to end, right? Those police resources can be, you know, put towards more violent crimes, which we've, you know, unfortunately seen rise in Maryland. And also those people who, you know, will have their records expunged, right? That when you have a criminal record for a simple possession of cannabis, it's not just the cannabis possession. You know, if anything else happens to you and you have that record now, you're going to have the law stacked against you for simply having a joint. It's been preventing people from getting housing, jobs, proper education. It's, you know, ruined communities. Oftentimes people simply just, you know, having an amount of cannabis in their pocket that they're going to smoke, right? A joint's worth or less. And it's ruined far too many lives. And that life that's ruined, it doesn't stop at the person with the conviction. That could be a father with a young family and now he can't work, right? So there's a downstream effect that, you know, this legalization is going to change people's lives here in Maryland. Also, just because it's adult use cannabis or recreational cannabis, it doesn't change the medical application of it. And now more people will have access to, you know, having a healthier alternative than opioids or even, you know, going to CVS and grabbing Tylenol and aspirin. You can consume a plant that's, you know, going to relieve a lot of the same symptoms that, you know, most of those drugs will. So, you know, just an incredible opportunity for the state to, you know, one, free people, you know, and also, you know, really a new economic boost with the new industry. When cannabis is legalized, there's always, you know, an influx of new businesses as the industry grows, whether it's the licenses that are directly cultivating, transporting, dispensing, you know, all of the things that are involved in the legal cannabis industry. And then also the ancillary businesses that support it, whether it's packaging companies, logistics companies, there's opportunity for people to be creative and play a part in the new industry that voting yes on question four will bring here in Maryland. So, you know, you can look across the country at states that have legalized before and really see how this thing happens. So, you know, I'm just glad that people made the decision to vote yes. Some people were wary because the way this has been legalized through ballot referendum means that now the state legislature has to craft the regulations that frame what all of this will look like. So, you know, now it's important for the community, for everyone who has an opinion or, you know, a feasible way for this industry to launch in an equitable fashion. So there's actually opportunity for, you know, one, when this industry launched on the medical side, there were almost, you know, no Black ownership. None of the licenses were awarded to any, you know, people of color. You might have had spotty ownership levels on a minority basis, but, you know, no ownership of the licenses themselves. And certainly, you know, there were companies that applied that were, you know, more than capable of running a great cannabis business. So, you know, one, hopefully there's a chance for new licensure, maybe some of those folk who applied prior. And again, like it's not just the fact that they applied and didn't win. When you apply to get a cannabis license, it's an expensive proposition. And a lot of times you end up paying for real estate for months and months and months, and even sometimes over a year, like we did in New Jersey with the current opportunity now. New Jersey legalized and we immediately went to work to look for real estate to build our business. And then suddenly the regulations allow the city to pull out of the program, right? So now we have to shift, lose all the money that we invested in that property. And so, you know, a lot of people invest their life savings into this opportunity. And so, you know, there's a hopefully a chance that, you know, we can rectify this and that people don't find themselves in that situation. And also that we can craft regulations that don't allow municipalities to box people out of opportunity because of the stigma of cannabis.
Gene, I don't want to interrupt you. You're rolling, dude. Gene Moreau's here. We're talking about cannabis. Talking about question four. I want to ask you about the stigma part of this because, look, it's not lost on me that people will come to me that don't know that I know you and say, "What happened to Gene Moreau? He retired. He's in the weed business. You know, whatever." I remember being with you in the last year, and you had said something to the effect of where you grew up and the fact that so many people have been incarcerated. Give everybody your background in this and how you got involved, went from being citizen to collegiate athlete to NFL player to former athlete involved in the cannabis space. And why football? Why so many football players? Kyle Turley was probably the first guy that came up to me 15 years ago. I went back, it was like 2008 or 9, back when, like, even on Radio Row talking about weed, like, it wasn't even legal in Colorado. It was still very against the rules, as they would say, back when you were playing. When did this transition happen for you?
You know, I'll trace my journey back to my youth in Plainfield, New Jersey, where really that's where the stigma sat in deep for me. I believed all of the, you know, drug war propaganda that was being spewed because I lived in a community where, you know, almost on a daily basis, you know, you could see the effects of the over-policing of cannabis, right? So I knew that at any given time, you know, someone in the neighborhood could get arrested. So, you know, people.
And it could be you if you had
were getting arrested just because they were in the neighborhood because someone else possessed a small amount of cannabis, right? So, you know, I believed it was bad. I didn't want to go to jail. And so I stayed away from it. And I was the guy, let's fast forward a little bit to in college, right? I'm the teammate telling everybody, like, you guys are crazy for smoking weed. You guys, you know, are you know, going to limit your opportunity. That part was right. But what I didn't realize was why they were consuming. And, you know, I believed that they were just, you know, young kids, you know, goofing off. But what was actually happening was they were consuming after practice, relieving themselves of stress, inflammation, and pain. And I had no clue, right? And so I just continued to believe that antiquated propaganda that was pushed. And fast forward to the time when we met and knew each other after I was traded to the Ravens and had quite a few injuries the last year I played. I got hurt in camp and had to miss some time. I had a concussion the very first game.
Yeah, I remember the concussion being a big, big issue. You're not fulfilling your destiny as a player, literally.
Yeah, it became an issue internally. And unfortunately, a lot of times in the NFL, injury, you know, can do that when parties, you know, for, you know, some reason can't agree on what's going on, right? So, you know, I'm missing time for the concussion. And I remember one of the last days before I was officially cleared, they were, you know, trying to, you know, find an option to put a visor on my helmet that was tinted because I was still having light sensitivity issues. And obviously, if I'm still having symptoms, I shouldn't be cleared to play no matter what the computer test says, right? There's all these, you know, computer tests that they test your baseline performance on. And once your numbers reach baseline or near baseline,
you're good enough, right? Yeah, good enough
that,
to play.
But when that happened, you know, I still couldn't really walk outside without the sunlight bothering me. And making me dizzy and giving me a migraine. That happened. Then I hurt my shoulder. Then I hurt my shoulder again. And you know, that's really where things became toxic with my relationship in the building. I don't think that the front office believed that my injury was serious enough to, you know, remove me from competition. But, you know, it was the second time that my labrum was torn. And when I was in the doc's office, I was told it was sprained. But my agent and I sent the MRI off to three different doctors who all gave me the opinion that it needed surgical attention. And so I chose to have my arm repaired because I couldn't even, you know, raise a, you know, few pound weight in the whirlpool during the rehab sessions. That really changed things. I think they didn't like that decision. The vibes between me and whether it was Harbaugh or Ozzie or whoever else was in the front office were very different. And they stopped talking to me pretty much, just like, you know, stopped communicating. And at the same time,
trying to play? You wanted to go back and play in your heart?
I got back up to well over, and so that was the lightest I had been that season, right? I felt great. It was the strongest, the best condition I had ever been. And I was playing some of my best ball in my career that year. And after that surgery, Nestor, I, no different than I had always done, I completely busted my ass and did everything I could do possible to get cleared and get back on the field and compete. And Harbaugh promised me that, or I won't say promise, but well, basically he did say, you're going to have an opportunity to compete, you know, when they brought in Ronnie Stanley, which was great. And that's one of my good friends till this day. I was ready. I was totally ready to go. I was in shape. I was strong as piss again. My shoulder felt great. And when, you know, things kicked off for the offseason, I was released in horrible fashion too. I'll never fucking forget it. Sorry for cussing, but it pissed me off when, you know, I'm in the locker room and, you know, Ozzie comes up to me and asked me if I wanted to go practice. You know, he told me I was released, but asked me if I wanted to go out and practice this anyway for the day for them. Are you fucking crazy, man? You're going to release me and I'm going to go work for you? But anyway, you know, by that time, Nestor, and there's some things that happened in between that. I had began a, you know, process of educating myself on all things cannabis prior to this, right? So when I had that surgery, a few days in, I was taking my prescription opioids, right? I believe I had Oxycontin.
This was labrum surgery, shoulder surgery, correct?
Shoulder surgery, okay. Correct. My left labrum, left. For the second time. And a few days in of taking my script, I'm sitting up in my rocking chair that was in my bedroom, and my daughter's walking down the hallway, but I don't recognize her. And I'm like, who is this kid walking down in my house? And then I just snapped out of it and realized in that moment that, like, those pills I had just taken about an hour ago, you know, they were starting to mess with my mind a little bit, and I needed something different. Like, I couldn't keep taking them. And, you know, I called a friend who I knew had tons of cannabis, and he was a teammate too. Just, you know, finally put into use what I had learned, right? Like, maybe there is a way that I can use this that will actually be for relief. Maybe this is not just to have a good time and kick it with the homies, but I can use this and not take these pills anymore. And that is exactly what happened, Nestor. I was using cannabis and I stopped taking opioids. I stopped taking the anti-inflammatories too, because those were tearing my stomach up. And then I needed another medication to deal with the gastro issues. And I just started using cannabis and everything changed for me at that point. You know, at that point I was sold, right? Everything that I was learning, I was now putting into practice for myself. And if we rewind just a few months prior to that, what I saw in Maryland, and as you talk about the business, and that's really where I entered the business during my last year as a Raven, was the time when Maryland's medical applications had opened up. And, you know, I saw that, you know, if there's an opportunity to, you know, create access for people in a business to heal themselves through this, that I'm all for it. And, you know, what I also realized after doing some work was that it was an incredible effort to put together, you know, even the team to apply for one of these licenses in Maryland. And so, understanding that I didn't have the bandwidth to do that myself, I sought out companies that, you know, at the time sort of had similar values and also demonstrated, you know, proficiency in business and all the things that my team had learned would point to, you know, a company that would be successful. And so I invested.
Did you own a business at all when you played? Or, I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah, just you're absolutely very, very business minded on the backside. I mean, it felt like there was no lull between you playing tackle and going into this industry, and, you know, no lack of side jokes and whatever about it. I mean, you must feel pretty vindicated here now that things legal, right? Like, that you were on the front end doing your graduate work the last 7 or 8 years to be able to, and you're still a young man. I mean, you've got a lot of life ahead of you, and the legalization, you're the first guy I thought of last Tuesday when this thing went legal. I thought you were in on this, whatever the brunt of the people would say, or how the team would feel about you, or how the league would feel. In the end, you were right.
I visited the realm of caring in Colorado and met a community full of families, mostly mothers, that have children with debilitating health conditions. And when I went there and saw how their lives were changing just with CBD alone, you couldn't tell me to keep my mouth closed about it anymore.
I remember when Sanjay Gupta did the piece on CNN. It was kind of a seminal moment, right?
It was with those people. It was with the realm of caring. It was with Charlotte's Web, and sort of. So
Charlotte's Web. Thank you.
Was the actual CBD producing business, but there was a faction behind it that was a community of mothers that you know, were treating their children with cannabis, gathering tons and tons of data, and, you know, able to, you know, finally provide, you know, some sort of a roadmap for families who were, you know, exploring cannabis for the first time. And, you know, that experience, you know, just set it in stone for me that this was the right thing to do.
These were children with epilepsy, right? And children with autism, correct?
Yeah. And, you know, and on that note on autism, you know, I had been in the autism community for years when I was in Jacksonville. You know, Dr. Julie Buckley, who runs Pediatric Partners of Ponte Vedra, focuses on children with autism, but she was my doctor when I was in the NFL until this day, and also still my children's doctor too. But her primary focus was autism. And I also was a part of her nonprofit organizations that, you know, look to solve issues in autism. Her practice is incredible. She has patients from around the world that come to her and in many cases have healed autism. And, you know, even her own daughter, Danny, my little sister, who, you know, was completely nonverbal at one point. And now if you met Danny, she's, you know, helping run the business. It's just incredible. And so, you know, those experiences and seeing the power of what cannabis can do on a medical front, you know, there was no way that I could be quiet about it and continue to allow the lies to be pushed. And so with the realm of caring, we actually put a study together to understand how CBD would metabolize and if it would be safe for players who are tested for THC metabolites to consume. But the NFLPA actually sent a letter out to the players telling them not to participate in our study. And we were partnered with Johns Hopkins University. Thankfully, that work had been completed and the study is now published. And I'll share it with you, Nestor, so you have it. But yeah, so much transpired. So, you know, I got involved in cannabis when I was a Raven. I had invested in what has now become one of the largest publicly traded companies in cannabis. That's Green Thumb Industries. And I helped build the company after I retired.
No, we're Green Thumb Industries. I hadn't heard about that.
I thought my thing was on Do Not Disturb. I'm sorry.
No worries. Keep going.
Yeah. So, you know, I made the investment in Green Thumb Industries, and there was opportunity after I retired to become a partner and help scale the business and help earn licenses like in Maryland, Nevada, in Ohio, and New Jersey, and Florida. So pretty much across the country.
But you haven't been active in Maryland, right? I can't go and buy even with a card at this point. Your product, correct, in Maryland.
So Green Thumb is in Maryland. You might have seen the dispensaries, their Rise, right? So Green Thumb is the company's name, but the dispensary brand is Rise.
Rise, okay.
Some of the products are Rhythm and Dog Walkers. They've been doing pretty well in Maryland. They do a good job at their facility down in Centerville. But you know, prior to that, and really what led me to cannabis was my involvement in real estate. I guess most prolifically, you know, my partner and I invested in a project in South Baltimore, the Stadium Square project in the Sharp Leadenhall neighborhood, which redeveloped a few blocks to, you know, mixed-use property, a ton of new there's a community center there that was built for the neighborhood and a ton of apartments, some retail space, some parking. It's a nice project.
It used really, to be a tailgate lot for the Ravens, right? Literally.
Right behind the stadium. Yeah, right behind the stadium. And so really, you know, connections through there. Why is this? Sorry. I don't know. Did you hear that ting?
No, I know. Everything's fine. Keep going. We're good.
So connections through there led me to, you know, some of the pathways I found in cannabis too and how we moved in Maryland. But yeah, so, you know, there was really no lull because I was already at it, right? As an athlete, if you have interests outside of your sport, which you should, you certainly can create the time to, you know, tackle those. And I made sure I did, right? When the day was over with ball, I'd go home, kiss the babies, and, you know, we'd be downtown, trying to learn the real estate game. And so just, you know, putting that time in business prior to retiring, I really just rolled right into it. I took about a month hanging, you know, just at the house, spending time with my family, and then joined Green Thumb and start to go to work.
So, Eugene Monroe is here, a former Raven, now involved in the cannabis space, was involved as a chairman in question four. If you voted for it, you're probably very interested in this conversation. You voted against it, you're probably asking questions. But for the state of Maryland, what can we expect, right, as citizens? And what does it mean internally for you, having been a first mover, quite frankly, in the industry, to be into it when it was, you know, under radars, I would say? It's out and about now. At what point will you be more involved in Maryland?
It's so interesting. One, you know, I'd say I've been heavily involved in Maryland from the start, whether it was the application process or the process, that we had to go through legally with the state to get our license back, a few years prior, and also pushing to get some of the minorities who did not have opportunities, licenses. Cannabis legalization will kick in July of next year, July 2023. Since it's been legalized, the legislature has to enact regulations that will frame what that all looks like. So concretely, I couldn't tell you exactly what it's going to look like in Maryland. That's all being worked out. And there's some proposed bill language that, being acknowledged. I believe that there's a lot of changes that the community wants to see happen before this thing is adopted. So, I just hope that people.
Is that as simple as we're not going to have a cannabis business in my hometown like we used to have porn shops, or what?
No, that's
what
part of
advice
it
would be, so, that you don't want that in Towson or in Bel Air or wherever?
That's part of it, right? So municipalities may get the ability to restrict cannabis businesses in their jurisdiction.
We're a green free town. Is that what it would be?
Yeah, right. And unfortunately, we still have people that believe the stigma and don't understand what this really means. And so they typically believe, that their communities will become unsafe, right? We can look at every state that has done this and see that states or those areas, that have cannabis businesses do not become, unsafe areas. And in fact, usually more secure because of the security presence. Also, there's a belief for people who, didn't want this to pass, that the youth would get more access to cannabis. But we've actually seen a decrease in reported teen usage of cannabis in places where it's been legalized. And so there's many reasons why this is such a good thing. Most importantly, the prohibition of cannabis is a social justice issue. It's destroyed communities. It's caused the over-policing and then the downstream, impact of having even a simple, possession arrest. We can correct those things in Maryland now. That will all kick off in July. So, I'm just pushing that these regulations are equitable, because ultimately, as we talk about restorative justice on a social justice front, economic restoration through this is, the most significant pathway that this industry or this legalization will present through the industry. So people need a fighting chance, right? People need an opportunity, and what that will look like in Maryland is allowing new applicants, new businesses to get their companies up and running before the existing operators are able to massively scale. One, they're mostly well capitalized and at this point very likely have already paid back their initial investments on building their businesses. And now as the adult use market turns on and the number of consumers in the market multiplies, there will be a need for, you know, more products to hit the market. And so, you know, there's companies in Maryland who have already expanded their buildings and there's just no market for, you know, that much volume of product, but there certainly will be once adult use kicks in. So, you know, if this will be equitable, right, if we're going to launch a new industry and, you know, give people who were, you know, disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs an opportunity, if that opportunity is going to be real, you know, they need to, you know, have access to these licenses, access to, you know, some of the same expertise that the companies who have, you know, got awarded their licenses in the beginning and have been up and running for years. And quite frankly, most of which in Maryland were already extremely successful and well capitalized from other business ventures, right? So, you know, there's a lot to consider here as we take a look at how this will be equitable and at the same time, how we can retain the value in these licenses. Because if you look out west, you'll see that as, you know, states legalize and allow essentially unlimited number of participants in the industry, it devalues, you know, the product and makes it really hard for people to run businesses, particularly because of the taxes that are on the business, like 280E, which, you know, makes it hard for people to become profitable, especially if, you know, there's 1,000 other, for example, cultivators in a single state, like you know, look out west and see in places.
Well, everybody ran to Colorado and California, right? So, exactly. And Washington, right? So there is a track record now in other places as to what's good, what's bad, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. Where do you think Maryland sits on this? I mean, you've done as much work on this as anybody.
What I know is that it's been a strong point from the existing operators from the very beginning, because they've had a very anti-competitive nature. So, you know, I know that the existing operators will be fighting tooth and nail to ensure that whatever happens with the expansion of the market will be done in an extremely limited fashion so they can continue to enjoy the majority of the market share. But what needs to happen is the proliferation of opportunity for new businesses, new applicants, and quite frankly, for the state of Maryland, companies that, you know, can actually produce grade A cannabis, because there's only a couple here actually doing it. And you know, hardly consistently. So, you know, for that alone, right? For the patient and the consumer and the quality of product that they're even able to purchase, the diversity of that needs to be increased too. So, you know, legalization being equitable and creating new opportunity for that, you know, is really paramount. If we talk about this legalization, you know, being socially restorative, and the statistics in Maryland, you know, are, you know, some of the worst as we look, you know, across the country and see how communities have been disproportionately impacted.
Eugene Monroe is our guest, former Ravens tackle, now in the cannabis space, and working real hard as the law has been passed and we're gearing up on July. So from soup to nuts, from the beginning of your injury and using cannabis and the back end of your career and then going into this, over the last 7 or 8, you seem happy. You seem very focused into what you're doing here. And the time I've spent with you sort of off the field in recent years, not just an advocate for this, but also a storyteller around what people can expect in this, because not everybody was out in the front of this the way. What have you learned in the 8 years from doing this on the inside?
Oh, man, you know, God is good. And I've seen just, you know, this plant he created for us and how powerful it is and how many lives it's changed. It's changed my life. And, you know, the things, almost every time I hear the people who are opposed to cannabis, it's like everything you're saying has been disproven time and time again. And, you know, if you're concerned about health, for example, most people run immediately to, you know, smoking, right? You don't even have to smoke cannabis. You can drink it. You can eat it. You can rub it on your elbow or rub it on your knee or rub it on your back. You can, you know, infuse it into coconut oil and cook with it. It's such a diverse plant because the constituents that give us benefit are in oil. So it really permeates through a ton of different, you know, modes of ingestion. And it's so powerful. We're able now to create products that, you know, have, you know, very targeted solutions and very specific amounts of the cannabinoids that, you know, will produce specific effects, whether, you know, you need sleep or you need immediate pain relief.
Terp edibles now, right? Like that are very, very specific to what you're trying to achieve other than get high, right? Literally.
98% of the conversation is focused on just 2% of the plant, right? THC. You know, there's so many things that we're not talking about. You just mentioned terpenes, and most people know terpenes because of flavors, but you know, those terpenes in these plants are botanicals, and they're also providing you synergistic benefits along with the cannabinoids. And that's where we're finding the real relief. And so, you know, I'm just, you know, one, thankful for, you know, the opportunity to do this. You know, I'm committed because of, you know, the impact it's had on my own life, and the impact that I've seen it have on thousands of people. And this isn't anything new, right? This has been around for a long time, and the tide is certainly changing in regards to people's sentiment. And I just hope that we can continue to normalize cannabis in a way that breaks the stigma. And, you know, people won't be, you know, villainized for consuming it. And for those who don't want to consume it, look, don't, like, you know, it's not being forced on you because it's being proliferated through access. You know, and if you believe that it's unhealthy for you, just know that it's healthy for someone else. It's a healthier option for someone who's, you know, dealing with, you know, Maryland had over 20 qualifying conditions, I believe, to, you know, allow someone access to cannabis. Well, now, you know, you don't need a doctor's note, you know, with legalization to go get, you know, your Tylenol from CVS, right? And it'll be a similar thing if, you know, you're aching, right? If you're driving trucks and your hips hurting from sitting in that seat all day, you know, you can go to the shop and, you know, get some, you know, topicals or, you know, get an edible or, you know, if you want to smoke, get some and roll up and, you know, have some relief without swallowing pills. And if you do want to swallow pills, they also have capsules that are nothing more than cannabis and MCT oil that you can ingest.
Gene, I appreciate your time and you coming on and explaining what's going on in your world. People ask me a lot of times about it, and I thought, man, when we legalize, you're one of the first guys I'm going to reach. I'm going to continue to reach you as a resource as all this rolls out. I mean, you have become a bit of a scientist about it, but more than that, the law and how it affects business and what the future is going to be, because this is a monumental thing for the state, right? I mean, when we're talking about a year from now, everything's going to be different this time next Raven season, and people understanding it and the stigma, right? The stigma comes to all of us over the age of, I don't know, 30, right? Anybody over the age of 30 was told by their parents and by society that this was not only not acceptable, not good for you, but it would get you arrested and it would get you a dick. I mean, all of the reefer madness stories from 100 years ago, still there. Obviously, for anybody who's educated, that's gone away. Then there's the practicality of, we got to tax it. We got to keep it safe. We got to put it in the right places. We got to make sure the label is what it says it's going to be. All of this is the space that, quite frankly, you live in, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been, you know, running cannabis businesses for some years now. And, you know, most recently, my partner, Leo Bridgewater, who's a rather decorated combat veteran from New Jersey, he and I and my brother, Matt Bickle, have started Collective 60 New Jersey. And so we're going to cultivate, manufacture cannabis. And once the moratorium is over and we're allowed to also dispense and do the rest of the licenses that the state has allowed for, we'll be vertically integrated. We're in Millville, New Jersey. And you know, so we're excited. We're in the, you know, pre-construction phase of that project. And I'm just pumped to get it up and running. And so, you know, while that happens, you know, we'll be duly focused on how we can ensure Maryland is equitable. And we'll certainly be coming to Maryland once opportunity for new licensure is allowed.
Hey, man. Stay safe out there. Still watching football, watching the Ravens a little bit.
Hey, you know what? The first few years out, I didn't watch ball at all. But you know, I've been and I was also on the road a lot, right? Traveling because Green Thumb was based in Chicago, so I'd be there a lot. And then I was also traveling to meet people and understand how facilities are built. And so I was on the road a lot. But now I'm forcing myself to be home a lot more. And I have been, you know, tuning in the ball just a little bit. I watched the Vikings Bills game yesterday. Man, that was a good one.
Made you want to play a little bit again, huh?
Oh no, man. So watching it reaffirms that I do not want to play. And oftentimes I'm like, damn, I really used to do this. Like, this is crazy. Like, this is absolutely insane. I don't miss playing at all, but I do get a kick out of watching it now for sure.
Well, hey, yeah, man, take care of yourself, your family. I hope to see you soon out on the road. Is this thing – come get a crab cake with me on a Friday, and we'll sit and we'll talk at length maybe into the spring when some of the regulations and the rules and, you know, the rules of the game get displayed here in Maryland. But always good to see you, man. I appreciate your time. I always appreciate your professionalism and your friendship over the years coming here to Baltimore.
No, you're a good man. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on your platform. I do appreciate it. I'll jump on anytime. Just reach out, and I will definitely come get some crab cakes with you, man.
I love that. I'd bring your wife, too. I like her more than I like you.
Hey, man, she's a wonderful woman, man. She's very likable, a lot more personable than I am, too.
Well, she's all Maryland, man. She's local.
Yeah. You guys get each other. That's what it is.
Hey, man, take care of yourself, and I hope to see you soon, okay?
Yeah, I'll see you soon, man.
Hey, where can people go to get information about your product? Is there a website?
And so if you just follow me, you know, I'm starting to, you know, activate social a little bit more. I actually, you know, deleted my social for quite some time. And, you know, the page I have up now, I kind of just like haven't been really, you know, online that much. But I will, you know, because we have businesses that will need to, you know, we want to, you know, communicate education to people, right? There's so much that people don't know about cannabis. People come to me and my partner Leo a lot that have entrepreneurial interest in the business and, you know, want to know how to get started, you know, need, you know, access to resources and such. So, you know, we'll start to use our social platforms to, you know, move and build a community. So you can follow me at Eugene Green Monroe. I also have a podcast that we have yet to launch, but we've been recording and just getting ready. And so once we start posting our episodes, we look to be a weekly show at first, and then start to sprinkle in some live days too. And so that is the Smoke and Heroes podcast. It's myself and again my partner Leo Bridgewater, who's also you know, part of my New Jersey collective 60 business. So you know, we've got a lot of things we've got going together. He's also the leader for veterans outreach at M4MM, which is Minorities for Medical Marijuana. So you know, Leo's always pushing on the activism advocacy front. He's really a leader for that in New Jersey, always educating people on the opportunities and you know, who, what, where, when, how, why, and you know, to access all of it. Yeah, these are really crazy times, man. Really good time. There's so much new opportunity. You know, a lot of hurry up and wait. And so, you know, we're just, you know, helping people, you know, find their way. You know, we've had, you know, the fortunate and fun opportunity to do that with some friends, and now we'll be extending that a little bit here. So, yeah, a lot of stuff cooking. We're actually headed to Vegas tomorrow to the marijuana, business dailies, MJ BizCon. So it's the largest cannabis conference, in the U.S., that's held in Vegas once a year. And then they have offshoots, during the year, but,
a couple other states get legal last week besides Maryland, I would think.
You know, we had five that were up, and
Arkansas two, lost though, right?
Yeah, so we have five that were up, and Arkansas lost, and as did North Dakota, South Dakota.
There's no people there anyway, nobody's listening there, so
yeah, you know, there's I'm sure there's some people up there that would have been happy about it passing too, you know. When you look at the map and, you know, see where cannabis hasn't been legalized yet, it's interesting when you understand the sort of black market and the states people drive through to get to certain places. Like, there's some interesting places that it hasn't been legalized yet. So, but it's, you know, that the worlds of the black and legal cannabis markets, they're really colliding, and legalization across the states has created, you know, so much of a gray area that sometimes you can't even tell whether a business might be legal or not, because they're just openly doing what the other licensed companies are doing.
I saw in New York everywhere, and with the fentanyl thing, it's frightening. I mean, you know, you want to know what you're buying, actually, no matter what you're buying at this point.
That's right? What I was getting at, right? You mentioned earlier legalization bringing upon safety, right? And so through the legal structure, you know, product gets tested, right? So there's some level of, you know, accountability by the time the product gets to the consumer or the patient. But in the black and legacy market, you don't have that, right? And so, you know, it's a good thing to see access spread, especially since we know that a lot of these products on the black market are tainted nowadays, and people are, you know, putting fentanyl in them. And, you know, I've heard, you know, a number of stories that are close to me, with people that, you know, unfortunately didn't make it after having tainted product. And it's just, it's soul crushing, quite frankly. And so, you know, if we can, you know, again, that's just like another way that, you know, legalizing cannabis can help us in our opioid epidemic, right? Providing a legal and safe pathway, because, you know, now the product in the streets tainted with opioids too.
Hey, man, I couldn't bring you on before because it was all illicit last week. Now that we're this week, we're all, it's great to visit with you, and it's great to get some education. And I'm glad we can talk frankly about this. And I will see you for a crab cake in the spring. We'll get some more updates for you. And I won't ask you about football anymore. How about that? All right.
No, I'll see you before the spring, man. Let's get together soon. I want to have you come out on my show, man, on the Smoking Heroes podcast.
I'm in.
Yeah. Come on out, man, to the cabin. And
it could be my Elon Musk moment. I'll come out to your thing. I knew I'd make you laugh. Eugene Monroe, former Raven, now in the cannabis space. You can find him out in the social media for some education.
Eugene Green Monroe. Check me out on Instagram at Eugene Green Monroe. I'll push most of my stuff out of there. So,
well, I appreciate you, man. Take care of yourself. Stay safe. All right. Have a good holiday. Yeah,
thank you, man.
Don't eat too much pumpkin pie and turkey next week. All right?
I stay in good shape, man. I'm going to do that.
You look good, man. You look fit as a fiddle. We are doing a Maryland Crab Cake Tour this Friday. We're going to be at Pappas. I just got word that we're going to have a world champion there, Adam Kolarik, from the former champion Los Angeles Dodgers of Catonsville. He and his dad are coming out with Mike Bordick on Friday. Also going to have Dan Rodericks out on Friday, and David Steele, who's written another book on race and sports. I'm looking forward to chatting with him. We're going to be giving away the Maryland Scratch-Offs by the Maryland Lottery, Raven Scratch-Offs on Friday. You can win up to $20,000, as well as our friends at Goodwill. And I'm wearing my Window Nation shirt. You can reach them 866-9 Nation. Now that the cold weather is here, I'm very, very happy to have these new windows where I'm getting the light in. This light you see here is the Window Nation light coming in. Looks like sunshine. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.